The following is a paid advertisement of St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics. References to any specific product, services, or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by St. Anthony Hospital, Carroll Broadcasting, or its advertisers. The views expressed by the host or guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Welcome to the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. Dr. Godding specializes in joint preservation, reconstruction, and replacement surgery, and brings over 25 years of orthopedic excellence to St. Anthony Hospital and to the Carroll area. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Orthopedics, go to stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.
Good Sunday morning, Iowa. It's Dr. Rick Godding. Thank you for choosing to spend some time with me here this morning. And so it's really that time of year. Many trips to True Value Hardware and Home Depot and trying to get everything done. I've been working like crazy out in the yard. And some of it was planting. And I talked about, you know, I just love the real... the peace of planting out there in the garden and then watching it grow. And I've only just planted some flowers so far, but man, it really is a magical time of year. And there's something about just putting either a seed or a start in the ground and watching it grow. There's just something pretty cool about that. I'm sure that many of you out there do some gardening, and probably many of you that listen do some farming. And it really is. There's something different about it, different than anything else in the world, is tending to a plant that you have put in the ground. And I can only imagine the feeling that it must be for farmers to go through that cycle, and everything. It must be pretty cool, pretty fun, you know, and knowing you're feeding people and all that. It's certainly front and center here in Iowa, as far as it's definitely part of everything around here. And and so definitely, you know, out here in Carroll County, just surrounded by corn and beans, and it's just interesting. So when I was really young and I lived in this smaller town outside of Illinois, I did have a friend who was a farmer, and he was a few miles out, but if you kept going in west of Chicago and south, of course, more south, you would run into more farms. Definitely southern Illinois is chock full of corn and beans. So it's just interesting to have been in this area for so long, I guess. I went out to my friend's farm a fair amount. But I never really helped him because I was so young. I left there when I was 12. And I think my memory is that we didn't hang out too much once we went to middle school. Like, we were friends in first through fifth grade. And I don't remember if he moved away or whatever. It's funny how your recollection of those kind of things gets a little fuzzier as you get older. But I definitely recall having some good times. And, you know, I think it definitely breeds a mentality when you're sort of around farming and ranching and those kind of things. I mean, I think people just understand how the world works in a different way, because they understand that things can go wrong, and it's nice to be around people who kind of have a real understanding of how the world works, like the physical world. I mean, not the world like how people make it work. I don't understand that at all. I don't understand. Human interactions are complex. People are very complex, and they interact with each other in very complex ways. So one thing I wanted to talk about today is I had a patient who came in and had a joint replacement years ago and had a pretty significant neck infection on the back of his neck and had been treated with some antibiotics. And, you know, there was some concern that his implant, his orthopedic implant, it was a joint replacement. So it's hips and knees mostly is what we're talking about, but you could say maybe shoulders too. I don't think I've ever heard of anything else getting infected late. So when I say late, I mean years after. You can get infected. If you have a joint replacement in, you can get infected years after. Now, one thing I always try to tell my patients is, listen, if you have an infection anywhere in your body, it behooves you to get that treated as soon as possible. And he did. I think some people don't realize, and even some other, you know, medical professionals don't realize that you can, years after a knee or a hip replacement, and probably a shoulder, although I don't know that I've ever seen one happen, but I have seen people years out get infected. So if you do have something happen and you have a big cyst that looks infected, something like that, get it treated as soon as possible. And one of the things that comes up is dental work. Now, up until, I believe it was 2015, the American Dental Association and the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons were recommending antibiotics for routine dental care. Then they both changed right around 2015. And now what they've said is there's no real evidence that something like a tooth cleaning is going to get you infected. And so they both have pulled their recommendations on that. And in other words, they now no longer, now we're talking about routine dental work, teeth cleaning, stuff like that. If you're having a root canal, which is sort of, you know, by definition, working with something infected, or if you have an infected tooth or something like that, certainly should get some antibiotics. But if you're just going to do some routine dental work, now, you know, what's routine and what's more complicated, I don't really know each particular procedure, but certainly the bigger ones like the root canals and the and anything where you're working with something that's already infected, or if you know that you have an abscess in a tooth, it's good to get that looked after as soon as possible. Again, when you look at the data, in other words, you look, you know, that's how we practice medicine, is people will do studies and they'll say, okay, how many total knees were done using this technique? And so we did a study center. We'll say we did 100 knees this way and 100 knees this other way, and these knees did better, and we think it's because of this. That's kind of how we move forward in orthopedics and science in general and medicine in general. You try to control for everything you possibly can and reduce the variables. So if you're doing, let's just say, for instance, there's a mini incision knee replacement that some people will do. And I went through this 15 years ago or so when it was really, really hot. I did a few of them. There's many different types of vastus splitting, and there's this and that. Like, we don't cut the muscle. We don't cut the muscle. We split it. Okay, well, all right. So it's all intended to get a better outcome for the patient, but sometimes it almost kind of breaks down into being almost gimmicky because, you know, many, many big studies have shown that at 6 weeks and certainly at 3 months, there's no difference in outcome related to how you did the knee replacement. But there are some studies that show that at 6 weeks, you have better flexion of your knee. Now, the problem is, so here's a study. So they set it up. They said, we're going to do 100 knees with one surgeon. We're going to use a normal incision. We're going to do 100 knees with another, with the same surgeon, because that's what you got to do. You got to match it up. Same surgeon, and we'll use the smaller incision. We'll match for age. We'll match for other medical conditions. So, you know, you will match for sex. So you want to try to get, you know, maybe 50 men and 50 women in each group. And you want people to be a certain amount of age. In other words, you don't want to be comparing a bunch of 88-year-olds to a bunch of 50-year-olds. As few of those variables as possible, you try to get rid of. This is called cohort matching. So then surgeon will do these, let's say a couple hundred operations, 100 one way and 100 the other. The reason you do the same surgeon, again, you're just trying to get rid of any variable you can. then it's at what stage did the patient bend the knee to 90 degrees? Was it a week? Was it 2 days? Was it 8 days, 10 days? And those are the kind of studies that slowly make progress. And then, of course, you have new implant ideas. So the changes in implants from when I was a first-year resident to now are pretty dramatic. When I first started my residency, we told everybody, you know, this total knee is going to last you about 10 years. And so there were some design reasons for that and that we've improved on in that time frame. But most importantly, the materials, the production of the actual material, the plastic is produced in a way that when they are going through the production of the actual plastic that goes in between the metal, and almost all joint replacements have metal and plastic, everybody's pretty well gone away from the metal on metal because it caused some issues we could talk about another time. They never did metal on metal knees. It was just metal on metal hips, and they've gone away from those. So the big design changes have been really more material in the knee, and then some design stuff in the hip. They have what's called multi-directional cups that basically have a ball, inside a cup, as opposed to just the ball inside a cup. So those have been big. The biggest groundbreaking thing, I think, has been the reverse total shoulder replacement. And, you know, that's where we take the shoulder joint and we take the ball out and we put a new ball on the socket side and then put a socket on the ball side. And the reason that works is because it changes the center of rotation and it allows your deltoid to work in the face of a rotator cuff that's torn. And that's why it was come up with in the first place, because shoulders with torn rotator cuffs were failing. They weren't doing very well. So that's sort of like the biggest, most kind of radical, just groundbreaking, like here's a completely new, I mean, it's not completely new because a regular shoulder replacement is a shoulder replacement, but it's very different. It allows hundreds of thousands of people who otherwise just could not have had a shoulder replacement to get a shoulder replacement when they have a deficient rotator cuff. So those are kind of the big groundbreaking things. And I don't have any idea how anybody came up with a reverse total shoulder. I mean, that's just some really out-of-the-box thinking. Let me turn this entire prosthesis around and change the center of rotation. I mean, that's wild. And it's the only joint in the body where we do that kind of thing. There's no reverse hips or reverse knees or anything like that. But it worked out well. But that's the process. Is you identify a place where you think things can improve, and then you match people up together and you do these studies, and then, you know, hopefully you can make some slow and steady progress and occasionally make giant leaps like the reverse total shoulder. But again, so the original reverse total shoulders that came out, they had to improve those designs dramatically before it was something that really caught on. I mean, people were doing them, I think, 20 years ago. But it wasn't really until 10 years ago that really people started really jumping on board, because they had made some pretty significant changes to the designs. And that's about when I started doing them, yeah, about 10 years ago. So I did not do those in Kauai. And they had really come along at the time that I moved back to the Midwest. And the literature was showing that they were doing really, really well. And that reverse total shoulder, that's one that still, in my practice, I reserve that for patients over 70 for sure, and over 75 if I can. But some people have started to do those in younger patients. I don't know that that's something I would ever want to do, because the fact is that once that were to wear out, if your reverse total shoulder were to wear out, you really wouldn't have any good bailouts. You just have to put what's called a hemiarthroplasty in there, and then your shoulder's just never going to move around like you would want it to. But again, you know, you weigh that. Decision-making in orthopedics is, like in anything in medicine, is very difficult. I mean, there's a lot of factors going on. What is it worth to somebody to have, if they're 50, to have 15 or 20 years of function of a shoulder and then maybe lose it later? So these are all, they're all very complex decisions. I mean, it's an easy decision is, hey, you're 70 years old and you've got really bad knee arthritis and you can hardly walk and you've had some injections and some anti-inflammatory medications and they're not helping you and it's really a tough lifestyle for you and you want to feel better and you're healthy, hey man, knee replacement, that's an easy one. But I've had 50, I'm not myself, but if the patient is 50 and has had multiple operations and kind of the only thing left is a reverse total shoulder, and you got to really sit down and talk to that patient about what are the options, and you have to scale it. What does the patient do for a living? How has the patient done with other surgeries? There's just so many factors, and that's what makes it interesting in orthopedics and also in medicine in general, is that you really, there are broader categories, but each individual person can have a whole story, or each one does have a whole storyline, and that affects how they're doing, their other health issues, their weight, their job, and even, you know, social support. I've got patients who really could use a particular operation, but they don't have the social support to get them through the time frame immediately after the operation when they're going to need some help. So lots and lots of factors out there that guide us when we're making these decisions. Most of it is obviously, we make it as science-based as we can. We use what science is available for as many factors in the decision-making as we can, and then we kind of ask the patient to help guide us through these decisions, and that's what we do. I thought it'd be interesting because we talk a lot about medicine and science, but we don't really break down how it happens. But that's what the situation is. You know, if there's a new technique or a new implant in orthopedics, well, that's a long process, a new implant, as you can imagine. Very long process. And even if it's a total knee and there have been other total knees, you really got to get a lot of FDA approvals to come out with a new total knee. And you have to talk about your design rationale and what problem you're trying to solve and all this stuff. So it is interesting. And as much as people talk about the U.S. healthcare system, I have worked in another one in Australia. And I can tell you, the U.S. healthcare system has a lot of flaws. It's a very big country and we're trying to give the very best healthcare to a lot of people. Sometimes it's not perfect, but you know, going around the world a little bit, we got a pretty good system, and we certainly can do some things to patch it up and repair it. But overall, it's functioning pretty well, and I think that we're starting to see a glimmer of people really taking health and being healthy seriously. And you know that I am all about that, and I'm very happy about that. And so hopefully that will lead to better outcomes with everything that we're doing in medicine. So, happy spring. It looks like spring has finally sprung, except for a few coughs and starts. Winter is gone, and go out and be healthy and enjoy it, and you have a blessed week, Iowa.
This has been the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics, go to www.stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.